Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I want to give French a different ending. I want to give Jeremy a different ending. I want to give Elegance a different ending. And I want to give my own loved ones a different ending. But I know that my job is to be a mirror, and it's not my job to fix what is or what was. I can only hope to be a realistic enough mirror for folks to see themselves and not like it and change course.
Hello and welcome to The Awardist, where we are chatting with the actors, creators, and more who are contenders this year. And we're breaking down the state of the 2023 Oscars race. Speaking of, it is now officially 2023, so Happy New Year! I'm Entertainment Weekly Executive Editor Jared Hall, and joining me on this episode are some familiar voices to all of you loyal listeners, EW Executive Editor Clarissa Cruz and Senior Movies Editor Joshua Rothkopf. And I extend the same greeting to both of you. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year.
New Year.
Hi. It's very exciting. That means we are, you know, the window is getting smaller and smaller until the Oscars are here. Before we get into some of the business of the episode, I want to give folks a little preview of what's in store. We have EW Awards correspondent Dave Karger in conversation with The Inspection stars Jeremy Pope and Gabrielle Union. Pope plays a gay man whose own religious mother, played by Union, can't contain her homophobia. He then joins the military, where he faces just as much, if not more, homophobia there. And this is based on writer and director Elegance Bratton's own life, his own story. Josh, you reviewed this movie. Where would you say Jeremy Pope and Gabrielle Union excel in their performances?
It's a really, really satisfying movie, and I recommend it to anyone listening. The Inspection is a showcase for both of their performances. And I think where they excel, to your question, is you've seen this story before. You've seen it in An Officer and a Gentleman. You've seen it in Stripes. But they bring a lot of depth to these parts. They bring some unexpected notes. Union especially really is not holding back from playing a very despicable character, one that she spoke to EW about having a hard time connecting with and trying to find a place to play the character. Obviously, she doesn't roll with homophobia in any sense of the word, but the character is very much a homophobe. And it's a fascinating note to strike in a movie that's essentially inspirational. Elegance Bratton's story is his own personal story, like you mentioned, about him entering into the Marines. He was homeless and out. And those two things don't often go hand in hand with recruits at Paris Island, but the film does an excellent job of recreating what it feels like to be in a boot camp and the camaraderie that kind of evolves among men who are going through the toughest experience of their lives up to that point. I recommend the film strongly. It is an indie and it's very satisfying. I would love to say that its Oscar chances are as high as they could be. They're not quite in the top echelon. I think it has a bit of an uphill struggle. Clarissa, what do you think? Do you think that The Inspection has any chance at all?
I think the biggest chance would be in the acting categories for the people that you mentioned. I agree with you, Josh. I thought Jeremy and Gabrielle were fantastic. I thought Jeremy, you know, not just, you know, the emotional journey that his character takes, but also the physical one. I mean, like you said, we've all seen these boot camp movies, but this one seemed especially, you know, brutal and torturous just physically, you know, what he had to go through to transform himself into a soldier. And it just, I love these performances where it's just as much as of a physical challenge as it is a mental one. And I think he really went above and beyond my expectations, given the roles that he's played in the past. So I thought he was fantastic. And like you said about Gabrielle, she was playing something that is so far from her own personal experience. I mean, she has a trans child and she's very vocal about, you know, not being homophobic and her, and to be able to play this character so convincingly, I think she had to probably break through some barriers within to really access that. And I thought she did a fantastic job. But, you know, regardless of what her personal life is, I thought her performance was great. And I think if it stands a chance, I think it's for supporting for her and for best actor for him.
Yeah, well, we certainly encourage folks to stick around and listen to that interview. They're going to get into a lot of the nuts and bolts of those performances with Dave. I do have to admit to you guys, when I remember a while back first seeing the casting for this, and I was like, hold on, Gabrielle Union's old enough to be playing the mother of an adult child? And then I was like, oh, right, she is. I mean, now, as of, you know, this podcast, she is 50 years old, which kind of blew me away because she feels like such a younger spirit, you know?
She's aging backwards, as we all know. I mean, she looks so fantastic. But yeah, I know it did seem a little off. But also in the movie, there's some makeup going on, I think, that ages her. That sort of aging look a little bit more realistic, because in real life she glows from within.
Absolutely, that is a great way of putting it. She is a beautiful person for sure, inside and out. Okay, so now that we are in the new year, lots of, you know, top 10 lists and nominations have been announced. And all of the movies that are eligible for the Oscars have debuted because the cutoff was December 31st. I want to specifically talk a bit about Avatar: The Way of Water, which has proven to be a big old box office hit. I don't know about you guys. I'm not quite confident it's going to earn the $2.9 billion of the original, but it really kind of doesn't matter. It also has a slightly lower Rotten Tomato score than the first, 78 for the sequel compared to 82 for the original. But all indications are this one is a lock for Best Picture. So that out of the way, let's talk about the man behind it, James Cameron. Can he get one of those five Best Director slots?
I think he can.
There's no way. There's no way.
It is just such a, I mean, you know, directors always drive a movie, but a James Cameron movie is so much about James Cameron, and to honor that film without honoring the person who made it, I think something will explode somewhere, because I just don't think it's going to happen. And you know, I think, you know, as a piece of entertainment and being at the helm of something that ambitious, deserves that slot.
Yeah. I mean, it really is, like Clarissa says, an example of him being the prime mover behind the project. I mean, it might as well have a possessive before the title, James Cameron's Avatar: The Way of Water. And he's the guy responsible, and he makes it clear he's the king of the world, you know? And so the sad part about it, not sad, but I mean, the unfortunate part about it is that I think that a Cameron nomination for director will push a lot of worthy people to the second tier, I think. And that's too bad. It suddenly, what it does is it jeopardizes a potential nomination for the Daniels for Everything Everywhere All at Once. It jeopardizes a nomination for Sarah Polley for Women Talking. It jeopardizes a nomination for S.S. Rajamouli for RRR, because there are certain locks, I think, in that top five. Like if you're talking about Steven Spielberg for The Fabelmans or Todd Field for Tar, someone's going to fall. Someone's going to get pushed out by Cameron, because I think he just crashed the party in a big way.
All right. Speaking of people who could crash a party, I also want to bring up Austin Butler, who had I think he did a fantastic job as host of SNL's Christmas episode. But do you see that kind of attention? And it was, you know, he got some attention because his opening monologue was quite emotional, speaking about his mother and kind of dedicating the show to her. But do you see that doing enough to push him ahead of Brendan Fraser or Colin Farrell?
I think I'm not sure about that part of it, Jared, but I do think it's very well timed and well placed. I think about last season when Ariana DeBose hosted Saturday Night Live, and that was so timed. I feel like the bookers on SNL have a pulse on someone who's going to be a sure thing, and you know, she went on to win. And Austin, I think it was a good time to remind people of him. Everyone was super excited when they watched him in Elvis. And then, you know, that was a while ago when that movie came out. And so having this reminder right, you know, at the peak of award season, to have him on Saturday Night Live and, you know, to everybody and just kind of hitting it out of the park. And singing Elvis on top of that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was very well timed and very well placed. And it definitely didn't hurt. I think it definitely gave him a boost.
Yeah, right. They call it the SNL effect. I mean, it definitely. And also hearing him, like you say, like hearing him sing Blue Christmas, it's almost uncanny. It's eerie. There's something that is so perfect about it. And even Cecily Strong was, I think, a little knocked out. She's standing right next to him. Like he is, he can do Elvis now in his sleep. He's studied and performed this role for years. And it almost makes me hope that a sequel, some kind of Elvis sequel is written for him so he can continue to play this role. He's so great in it. But I definitely think that
give him a limited series.
Yes, fine. Bring it on. Yeah. It is a good moment for him to remind us that he was so extraordinary in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the short list before the holiday, Clarissa, I know you were, you and Dave Karger said you were really excited to see those come out, and those did come out just before Christmas. So let's go over, I'm just going to pick out a few categories here. We don't have to go through all of them. The big takeaway that I want to note first is that as someone who is not on the short list in the live action short film category, Taylor Swift's film for her song All Too Well did not make the cut. I'm just going to say that doesn't totally surprise me because I personally think people look at that as a music video, not a film.
I agree with you there. I remember when the campaign started and you know, I remember it had debuted at Sundance and then there was a longer version and I watched it and I was like, it's like a really good long music video, you know, like, and I remember, you know, and maybe I'm dating myself, but like, I remember in the '80s when they had these kind of extended music videos and then they stopped the music for a little bit and then do some dialogue and this did the same thing.
Yeah.
And so I totally get what you're saying there. It does feel more like that than, you know, a sort of self-contained film.
Yeah. And that's not to take anything away from it. It's fantastic.
It's fantastic, but like when John Landis did the Thriller video for Michael Jackson, he was never going to win an Oscar for it, right? I mean, I remember those long extended videos too. I used to love them. They were events. Uh-huh. And, you know, Taylor's trying to turn her music, her debut as a director into an event. I totally get that. But it makes perfect sense that she's right there, you know, in Best Original Song among other expected nominees like Rihanna and Lady Gaga for her song for Top Gun Maverick.
Yes. Yeah. I wanted to talk about that category first. So let's dive into that one more. You mentioned those two. Rita Wilson is also in here for her song from A Man Called Otto. Selena Gomez, her song My Mind and Me from her documentary, Selena Gomez, My Mind and Me. Applause from Tell It Like a Woman, Sophia Carson. Stand Up from Till, Jasmine Sullivan.
Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds.
Yes. I was going to say, Good Afternoon from the movie. Yes. Good Afternoon from Spirit. They sing the song, but it was written by Benj Pasek and Justin Paul, who, if I'm not mistaken, still need an Oscar for their shot at an EGOT. And then The Weeknd is also in the mix for his song from Avatar, The Way of Water. So I just want to point out that there is a world in which we could have an Oscars, assuming they include performances, and if they don't, we revolt, that it includes The Weeknd, Rihanna, Selena Gomez, Lady Gaga and Taylor Swift, or could also have Rita Wilson in there, or could have Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds performing at the Oscars,
or the guys from Not to.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes. So what's the takeaway here?
That would be a great concert.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Make it a film festival.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Like Coachella.
Or a music festival, I mean. Yes, yeah, the Oscars music festival. Yeah.
Or at least some kind of epic medley that they could get someone to do all of them. But it's an incredible year for Best Original Songs. And it kind of reminds me of I'm dating myself, but it reminds me of those years like 1984 and 85 when you had all sorts of like nominees from Purple Rain and Flashdance and all sorts of great songs. And the best original song category really became a kind of pop phenomenon at that point. So I like it returning to that. It's another point of engagement with a show that definitely needs it.
Yeah, I was going to say it'd be great for ratings if even, you know, a handful of those people decide to perform. I think it'd be great for the show.
Yeah. And reminder to everyone, this would be, should she win, Lady Gaga's second win in this category, because she did win for A Star Is Born. Okay, let's talk about international film. Are there any big surprises here? I can run through the list if we want. We've got Argentina, Austria, Belgium, Cambodia, Denmark, France, Germany, India, Ireland, Mexico, Morocco, Pakistan, Poland, South Korea, and Sweden all made the short list.
I mean, I think people who don't know about eligibility might be surprised that RRR isn't on here, but it actually wasn't submitted by India, so it wasn't eligible for the shortlist. But as far as the other titles, and you can chime in, Josh, because I know you've seen most of these, it doesn't seem too surprising to me.
Not at all, actually. Yeah, I mean, these are the expected list, and like you say, anyone who's not aware that RRR wasn't submitted will be shocked that it's not on that list. But I think that team will be pushing the film hard for other categories like Best Song. But I think that the expected front runners made the short list. Are you talking about films like Corsage and EO and Decision to Leave and There will be a lot of jockeying in the last stretch before we enter into phase two, as they call it, and the final five will emerge. It's very exciting.
Yeah, and I would say, aside from those ones that you already mentioned, Josh, I think Mexico, Bardo, and Germany's entry, All Quiet on the Western Front, maybe have the most mainstream recognition because they are actually available on streamers.
Netflix.
But correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they're both on Netflix, right?
They're both on Netflix. And in the case of All Quiet on the Western Front, it's just extraordinary as a war film. It's really a very, very special film. And that's actually a book that won Best Picture in 1930 in the first film version of it. And this new version has to contend with the legacy of that film, as well as being this classic piece of literature, and does an extraordinary job. That film was also nominated for Best Visual Effects, which is kind of an interesting win for it. And I think that Bardo is doing, it's kind of being rehabilitated by people who really passionately love it, or let's say they want to defend it from some of its initial response that it had out of Venice. So I do think you're right, Jared. Those films have the potential to cross over maybe in a more popular way than the other ones I mentioned.
Got it. Okay, so moving on to documentary, the shortlist here, I think includes all the ones that you would probably expect to see, but Josh and Clarissa, I defer to you. Is there anything missing?
Yes, Goodnight Oppie, I think would be a major omission. Goodnight Oppie is a documentary about the Mars rovers. It's an unusually moving scientific documentary, and it's narrated by Angela Bassett. And you watch it and you really believe in the mission of scientists, and it's intergenerational. It's a thrilling film for something that's about like a 15-year science project, but that didn't make the cut. And I think that there's actually something of a precedent in that you have the documentary branch sometimes trying to omit the most popular films so that other documentaries have more of a chance of making the final five. So that's happened before with movies like Keddie and Jane, where they don't even make the shortlist, those documentaries. And I think it's an active effort of curation on the doc branch's part.
It's an interesting strategy there. Yeah. Well, so having said that, are there one or two here that you would be shocked if they're not nominated?
Yeah, actually, I mean, I'd love to hear Clarissa's thoughts on this too. But for me, I think that Laura Poitras's All the Beauty and the Bloodshed should make the final bracket. I mean, this is in a very historic win at Venice. It won the Golden Lion for all films, and it's extremely rare for a documentary to win the top prize like that. It's a heartbreaking documentary about the opioid crisis and the artist Nan Golden. I do think that film is very much a front runner in that. Clarissa, is there one that you think that also belongs in the final five?
Well, just, you know, from the chatter in the office and hearing from you and Leah, Fire of Love seems to have a lot of passion. It's about the volcano couple, right?
Yes, the volcano, the married volcano couple. Yes.
The married volcano couple. And now I'm getting White Lotus flashbacks, so I shouldn't mention. Yeah. It's a very different kind of couple. But it just seems like that's one that people do feel passionately about and really like. So I'm not sure it's enough to beat out all the Beauty and the Bloodshed, which has picked up some precursors. So that probably has a bigger chance of winning. But I would say Fire of Love would probably make the bracket at least.
Both of those movies, by the way, Fire of Love and All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, are just really fun documentaries. They take you on a journey, both of them. They feel very nourishing as subjects. And so I encourage our listeners to check them both out. They're the opposite of eating your vegetables, if you have that idea about documentaries. Those two films especially are really excellent.
Okay, and the last one here I think we'll talk about is visual effects. We've kind of, you know, already in this episode talked about Avatar: The Way of Water, All Quiet on the Western Front. Both of those are on this short list. The rest of it is The Batman, Black Panther: Wakanda Forever, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, Fantastic Beasts: The Secrets of Dumbledore, which I forgot came out in 2022, to be quite honest, Jurassic World Dominion, Nope, 13 Lives, and Top Gun Maverick. Okay, so a really interesting one did not make that list. Josh, what do you make of this one? I'll let you break the news to everyone if they haven't seen it already.
It's a heartbreaker. Everything Everywhere All at Once, which has incredibly impressive effects, did not make the short list. And I mean, this is a great list of a lot of Marvel movies and superhero movies. And there are films on this list that I'm a big fan of, like a film like Nope, which I think had just eerie, unworldly effects. I really love the look of that film and the kind of, even the effect of its kind of night blue skies, I thought has stayed stayed with me for a long time. But I mean, let's be real, guys. Does anything have a chance against Avatar: The Way of Water?
I was going to say this is all talk. This is all talk because I don't think anyone is in any danger of seriously challenging Avatar. I mean, they had 13 years to work on it. It's a beautiful movie. I, you know, just from personal experience, I'm married to someone who works in VFX, and after every single movie we see, he points out. He points out all the ways that it didn't match up, where he saw the seams, like, oh, this didn't, you know. And after Avatar, he was like, well, I have nothing to say.
It's
no notes.
So,
yeah, no notes. Yeah.
That's a big endorsement then.
Even if you can't roll with Cameron's storytelling or his bro dialogue or whatever it is, the one thing that everyone can agree that the effects in this in Avatar: The Way of Water are just as groundbreaking and game changing as they were in the 2009 Avatar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he has dedicated so much of his life to obviously this franchise, but along with it, advancing technology. And there's something really to be said for that. And I think obviously reward it if other people can then use the technology. And you know, the movies are all about transporting the audience, and he certainly has figured out a really phenomenal way to do that. And obviously this is a guy who's very big on ocean conservancy and all of that. So he's very invested from a personal perspective too, about what he showed in this film in terms of the aspect of The Way of Water. Mm-hmm. So it makes complete sense that he's here. All right, folks. So that is our chit chat. We are going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere because coming up, we have a really fantastic interview with the stars of The Inspection, Jeremy Pope and Gabrielle Union. The Awardist will be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to The Awardist. All right, folks, let's get right to it. We've talked about them a little bit here. Jeremy Pope and Gabrielle Union, who star in the movie The Inspection, an indie you should absolutely be checking out. They're a little slightly right now out of range of a nomination, but perhaps this interview and seeing their performances will sway you. So without further ado, here's EW's awards correspondent Dave Karger with Gabrielle Union and Jeremy Pope.
Hello to you both. Great to see you.
Hi.
First thing I have to say is congratulations to you both on the nominations at the Spirit Awards. How cool that you're both nominated. I think that just really reflects your achievement together on this. So congratulations to you both.
Thank you so much.
What was your first reaction when you learned about this story? I mean, this is your director, Elegant Spratton's story. What struck you when you first heard what this movie was going to portray?
Right. I had a vision board. I create a vision board every year. A24 was on it. I was, you know, a fan of the work that they do and the stories that they tell. So that was kind of an in. I had an agent send me this script, wanted me to love it as much as she did, but really wanted me to connect with Elegance, thought we were of same kind of creative minds and hearts, and thought this will be someone, if not this project, at some point you guys will need to collaborate and work together. And I fell in love with the words on the page, and I fell in love with Elegance, and I wanted to protect him. I knew that by him being so vulnerable and honest and telling his story and giving it away, that he would need, you know, some special people around him to kind of protect the integrity of the piece, the emotionality of the piece. And I wanted to be the person that the audience met before they got to Elegance. So while I said yes early on and wanted to do it, it did take about 9 months before I got the official yes to be able to go on the journey of playing French. And in that same time is when Gab reached out, slid into the DMs, and we were able to connect and kind of say, if you're making this movie, I want to be a part of it. Let's do it together. You know, so it took some time, but I had an instinct pretty early on when I read the script that this was a project I needed to be a part of.
Mm. Gab, same thing for you, your first reaction?
My first reaction to the words were visceral. Heartbreaking, heart, just the heartache, but ultimately very hopeful. And I became addicted to the words. And then I was like, wait, this kind of feels familiar. And I realized I had read a New York Times article about Elegance a bit before, about Peer Kids, and it had covered a bit of his backstory in the article. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is this man I read about, and I'm gagging to work with this guy. And I had taken a meeting with Effie not too long before this. And I was just like, yo, whatever you're doing, I want to do. Like, if I could just have you on every project. And she's like, okay, say less. So everything came together beautifully, but it started with the words. And I kept coming back to them. I kept thinking about them. I couldn't shake it. And I knew, okay, this is something I have to get over my own fears and my own BS and try to tackle.
That's great. We should tell people, you mentioned Peer Kids. Peer Kids is Elegance's documentary that he made a few years ago that was very acclaimed, which I'm dying to see now that I love The Inspection. I want to see what his documentary work is about.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Yeah.
So, okay, Gab, so help me through this. My understanding is that initially you were just going to sign on as a producer and not be in the movie. How could you, like, read the script and not be like, not only am I going to produce, but I'm playing Inez.
Well, my low self-esteem, it kicks in every so often. So as an executive producer, I start making my list. As I'm reading, I'm making a list of who I think should be, you know, these different characters. And when it came to Inez, I just literally didn't believe I had what it took or would be anyone else's choice. So I never factored myself in at all. And then when they were like, no, we want you to be Inez, it was kind of a jolt to the system. And Elegance was just so confident that I could do it. And he instilled in me a level of confidence that I've never had in myself for my ability in this industry. I have a lot of confidence when it comes to, I can put asses in the seats. I know how to sell things, but do I believe I deserve different kinds of opportunities? And that answer was a resounding no. So it took Elegance convincing me of my ability to really wrap my brain around it, which sounds sad and I don't know, maybe a little out there, but yeah, I'm just not on these kind of lists. There's a reason I haven't done these movies, and it's not for a lack of interest. I just, they've never really been interested in me back. So it took a newbie in Elegance in saying it can only be you, Gab. It can only be you, for a few reasons, that I was able to sort of believe him and go for it.
I don't think it sounds sad. I think it sounds real. And it sounds objective about yourself, but I also think you were wrong. I think I'm glad that he convinced you, because you've shown us all that you can more than handle a role like this. So when you slid into the DMs, Jeremy's DMs, were you already on board as an actor or just as an EP?
No, I was on board across the board, on all of the things. And luckily, like when, you know, you make those mental lists, Jeremy is the list. Like there was no number two. So we all had that in agreement. Like I said, I would have been like 15th on my own list, but Jeremy was always number one on everybody's list. So I was like, let me do what I do as a producer and slide into those DMs. And I was like, hey, homie, we've never met before. I'm just a weird fan, but can we please do this together? And if you're on, you know, if you're in, I'm in, and we can, let's go make some magic.
So Jeremy, this was a full on offer. You didn't have to like read for it or anything.
I mean, listen, fam, let's keep it 100. Like there were, you know, things move the way that they need to move, you know? And I met with Elegance, we talked, and then it is one of those things. Now I think I've reached a place in my career where, you know, it's kind of like you're having conversations, but you're like, is it an offer? What's going to happen? It's not like the straightforward, you go and you audition, you wait. It was just kind of this courting phase, if you will. So I didn't really know where I was come month two, month three, month four. But after 9 months, you kind of go, well, damn, they gave the job to somebody else. Just tell me that. You know what I mean? But ultimately, I feel like life had to do what it had to do. And I didn't know this piece of I was the only person on the list. That wasn't ever given to me till after the fact. But, you know, I had my moments of, is it because I don't have the box office guarantee? I've never led a studio film. So are there all these other business things that are in negotiation for if I can show up for this space or if someone will give me this opportunity? So I had to just kind of let it go and trust the universe will guide me and put me in the space I'm supposed to be in. So to make it full circle and go, oh, that feeling was right. I knew that I was supposed to do this. And I was supposed to work with Gab and I was supposed to work with Elegance from reading the script and now given the opportunity with a couple weeks in before we start filming. I then just took it and ran with it and wanted to imbue the project with all that I had.
Hmm. You know, it's so interesting when it's a film like this that is based on someone's real experience and based on two actual people. Given that, how did the two of you and Elegance work together, either before you arrived on set or once you were on set, to create a backstory? Because, you know, things are alluded to in the script of the history that these two have, and it's been 5 years, and, you know, there's an estrangement there. But how did you guys talk about it all in the context of this movie, in the context of his story and in the context of the script that is presented?
Well, first, you know, when they first approached me, his mom was alive. So it's playing someone that is alive and the mother of our director, writer, producer. oh gosh, that's a big undertaking. And, you know, 4 days after we got greenlit, you know, we were greenlit February 14th, 2020. She passed on February 18th, 2020. So then it's like, do you even want to tell this particular story? Are you comfortable? Are you healed enough? I mean, this is all happening in real time. And grief is, you know, it's a slow moving monster that can suffocate you at any moment. So you don't want to push anyone into something that they're not really emotionally prepared for. So we were working with, you know, at Elegance's pace, and he insisted that, you know, after a certain amount of time that he had done, you know, the work to get to a place at least where we can make this and he can feel good about it and he can and be in a place of clarity and direct, and also separate French and Inez from Elegance and his mother. Mm-hmm. And allow us to craft character versus doing an exact imitation of their relationship. Even though a lot of what I say is taken directly, you know, out of her mouth, I still had to create a character because, you know, as much as I love my kids, I don't know if they'd be the most reliable narrators as to who I am in the inner monologues that occupy my brain space. I have to be able to craft a character. And in order to do that, he gave me, her Bible, some of her things, her clothes. I wore different pieces of her wardrobe. But I had to get a sense of who she was outside of Elegance.
That's interesting. Jeremy, how about you? Same question. Like the kind of challenge of creating the backstory for French, but also for Elegance.
Right. I mean, I think the one thing that I know is true and had to be true was he had to trust me. He had to trust Gab. And I asked him very early on, I said, because this can get very complicated. And there's a world where this doesn't work, being that you're my writer and you're my director and you're the source. But you have to trust me, and you have to trust me to be the vessel and know that everything that you're telling me, I will use it to inform my best decisions. But I have to trust my instincts. And the only way that I can get to that place is knowing that the overseer of it trusts that I have the ability to have great instincts. So we had a conversation early on very much about like French, we're creating French, we're creating a version, you know, of your experiences, but French is separate. It doesn't, I'm not you. There's no way that I could be you. And there's no way I'll ever fully know, but we can try to understand and try to get as close as we can to the honest truth. And I feel like you have the truth, and then there's the truth. And that second truth is the truth that lies in our story and our objective and what our characters want. You know what I mean? So it was like, we have to best serve that as storytellers, as creatives. So we got to imbue it and put all of our pain and trauma and joy and love in this thing, ultimately serving the objective, which was this complicated relationship between French and his mother. And, you know, I think for me and Gab, then it became about, how can we create longing and this tension with this relationship that only has few specific scenes? And they are, you know, pages ripped out of things that have been directly said to Elegance. So it was our job to find the emotional connection and that heartbeat underneath. Because the one thing that I think is important to mention is that Elegance didn't hate his mother, never hated his mother. So there was like us trying to find that when the words are saying one thing, it's oftentimes in a person's face and an energy, you know, exchange of what they're really going through and feeling. So that was kind of the work that me, Gab, and Elegance had to do, you know, to make sure that relationship resonated as strong as it could.
Well, that comes across, I mean, just with so much of the negative energy that is, you know, coming at Ellis from his mom. And he says, if I get the line right, I will never give up on you. Mm-hmm. That just, I'll remember that forever. Mm-hmm. That's something that really kind of encapsulates what you're talking about. I'd be curious to know if Elegance, I'm not looking for like anyone to slam him. Did he ever show any rookie signs like on the set or as a first time narrative filmmaker? Was there a learning curve for him? There must have been. He did such a great job, but there must have been some things he was learning.
I think Effie might have a better take. She was there every single day, and I wasn't able to be there every single day. But from a producer standpoint, and this is where I'm a clock watcher and a bank account, you know, counter. I think, you know, when you have fun toys to play with and you have great actors and you think you have all the time in the world, I think sometimes you can lose sense of timing. But seasoned directors do the same thing. And I'm like, the sun is going to go down, whether you like it or not. And we can't play night for day. So, like, you know, some things like that where it's, there's just so much goodness and you are fighting the urge to shoot it every which way but Sunday, but you still have a rest of a day to get through and, like, you know, 4 hours. So those kinds of things. But it comes from a wealth of riches. You know, when you're kind of not having the cast that you want, the script is, you're still futzing with it on the fly, the money's funny, you know, seasoned directors do all kinds of rookie mistakes. So I would just call it someone really enjoying having a wealth of riches of incredible talent that you just want to shoot, like, every possible angle, direction, everything you ever learned in film school. You want it all, you know, you want to be able to show it all on the screen. But yeah, those are the kind of problems that you want. Like, I can pull you back in, but if you don't know how to get there in the first place, those are rookie mistakes that we can't really recover from. So those ones that he was making, I'll take any day.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm an actress. I'm like, more of
more coverage. Come on.
Jeremy, this is definitely one of those movies. I'm talking about the middle section now, kind of the boot camp section of the film, which is a large section. Definitely one of these movies where I'm watching, like, I would last 2 hours and I would be out the door on a bus back to my life. And it's just so inspiring and mind blowing what elegance and Ellis, your character, are able to handle. What goes through your mind in the playing of this? I mean, your mind must go there. Like, what parts of this could I handle as Jeremy or not?
Right. Yeah, there is that balance of, you know, going through the motions. I think one of the things in you saying that, the shower scene was a bit triggering for me. I had an experience, I was walking the streets of Harlem. I was wearing a denim shirt with polka dots and someone came and just punched me in my face and didn't take anything from me, just punched me. And I give you the context of me wearing this blue denim shirt because in my head, that's the only reason, you know, that would have given a clue or of someone clocking something about me. And I remember looking around the street and there were people that witnessed it, but no one came over to help me. Everyone would just say, go home, go home. And what I do, I ran home. And it was this fear of, like, what's going to happen? No one protecting me. So when we got to the shower scene and knowing that there was going to be this kind of incident that was happening, I felt very triggered by it. And how much do we need to show? How much beating do we need to allude to? Can we do it in a different way? Is there, you know, can we make it a ballet where we're not emphasizing the violence, but it was just me, Jeremy, being very, very anxious and nervous about being that vulnerable. Because what happens is you put your body through this thing. And what's not on the page is the screams and the grunts. But I started to pull and do these things that reminded me of something that was very traumatic and real. So he would call cut, but my body wouldn't know to cut it because it's like I'm in this dark space and, you know, and that is what it is. That's a part of the craft. That's a part of being an artist and being able to put it all in there. But that was kind of answering your question before, not necessarily a rookie mistake, but understanding that there is technique and there is process to certain people's approach to characters. And because Elegance comes from a docu kind of place or had, he was used to just put a camera up and let's see what we get. But I said, for me, what's going to make me feel safe as an artist is us to have these fully realized conversations about what this moment is and what we want it to mean and to be and how that's going to be reflected on screen. And what would happen is a lot of times when we'd have those hour and a half rehearsals or whatever to really understand why we're doing this and what it's for, that informed the camera team, that informed my ensemble of actors. And then oftentimes we get it in one or two takes because we knew what the agenda was and what the objective is. And I think that ended up being our saving grace for a first-time filmmaker, knowing exactly what he wanted to shoot and what the point was of showing a very intense physical moment with French, you know, getting drowned or in a shower, like what it meant and how it was furthering, you know, our plot and our story. But to have those certain, you know, personal parallels made it very challenging emotionally to show up and to continue to show up because we shot this movie in 19 days in the middle of Mississippi in a pandemic. So it was very ambitious of us to tell such a nuanced, vulnerable story and make sure that it was imbued with all that we could. But I think we tried and we showed up in that regard, and Gab watching her evolve and the character work she was doing and us just excavating what's not on the page to make sure we honor this story and this man, made for it to be a project that I think will live with me forever.
I'm so sorry that you went through that. I'm just really sorry.
No, I mean, you know, it's unfortunate, but you know, life does what it does. But to be able to use this character in this moment, and to imbue it, there was a conversation that I didn't need to have with Elegance because I had my own kind of, you know, way through it and understanding what this moment might may have felt like for French.
Mm-hmm. Gab, the scenes that you shared with Jeremy are all, I mean, they're all very intense. There's difficult things that are said. There's difficult feelings that these characters have for each other. Can you take me back to the filming of those very emotional, intense moments and how you as an actor with Jeremy decided to kind of deal with each other and relate to each other on those days, like in the moments leading up to filming a specifically tough moment or in the moments right after? Did you guys hug each other? Did you retreat to different parts of the room? How did you decide to deal with it?
No, I think from probably rehearsal, I think we just connected very quickly. And immediately you see that Jeremy has this energy, this purity, this honorable soul that you just want to protect and nurture and cover. So from that, like, pretty much if you saw me, you saw Jeremy, if I was on set and we were physically holding each other, touching each other, snubbed up together. And that's partly, we all needed the love to be there as talent, who all are coming in with our own stories, history, traumas, just as artists in the space, the love has to be there. And also, like, when you get into the research and the people that I know who suffer, I don't even know what the right word is. I've been quite shady lately, so I'm trying to think of a more helpful word, who have challenges loving their children, without condition and centering their own fears. They truly, in their minds and in their hearts, love their children. Like, they love them. And they think that ostracizing them, kicking them out, rejecting them, abusing them, is an extension of love. So from a practical standpoint and a creative, you know, character-based standpoint, the love had to be there. It's just her execution was just, you know, poor. It's the nicest, kindest way I could put that. But I mean, there's a moment at the very end where, you know, a lot of my scenes, especially like my scenes with Jeremy, Elegance wasn't in Video Village. He was next to the camera and sometimes would be filming, right, himself. But I could hear and I could feel a child wanting his mother more than anything. You know what I mean? And the mother in me that witnesses this kind of heartbreak daily, I had to keep that in there. So you knew that when she's saying these things, or the decision I made for Inez, it is coming from an excruciatingly dysfunctional place of love. And so that's where you almost feel like she's going to turn, because in the moment, I want to turn. I want to give French a different ending. I want to give Jeremy a different ending. I want to give Elegance a different ending. And I want to give my own loved ones a different ending. But I know that my job is to be a mirror. And it's not my job to fix what is or what was. Mm. I can only hope to be a realistic enough mirror for folks to see themselves and not like it and change course.
Yeah, I mean, even watching the movie a second time, after like 6 months after the first time I saw it, I'm not going to spoil anything for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, but this kind of meeting between the two characters, even though I knew what was going to happen, I was hoping it was going to go a different way. And it's just, it, amazing the power of movies that way. I don't want to dwell on this too much, but Jeremy, I'm just curious because I actually don't know the answer. What was the relationship? I know you're not fully playing Elegance and his mom, but what was the relationship between Elegance and his mom in the years between the ending of where the movie ends and her passing? Did it get any better?
No, it didn't necessarily get any better. I think what we see is he went on his quest of, you know, stepping into his purpose, and him serving in the Marines gave him an opportunity to pick up a camera, and that informed him as a documentary and becoming a director and all of those things, and going to NYU and Columbia and like all these things. But yeah, he hadn't spoke to his mom, and I think it was almost 15 years. And this film was an attempt to reach out to her. He knew that by Gabrielle Union playing his mother, somewhere on the street she would hear that there's a movie about your son and your life, and you have to watch it. And then maybe she'd have to see him fully and maybe call him, and that would start a conversation. But as Gab mentioned, the movie got greenlit one day, and a few days later, she had passed. But, you know, I do know that by Gab doing the work that she did and bringing his mother back to life for a moment for him, he was able to leave set lighter and walk through this life a little bit lighter. While these will be scars that are forever, you know, we are all able to use our pain and our trauma to build characters and become vessels for something that will speak bigger and larger than just us and those experiences. So I think having the gift of being able to share this film at the New York Film Festival, at TIFF, and have these Q&As with how this film resonates with people, I think it has affirmed and confirmed that idea that this story does resonate with people and lives in people's minds and hearts. And as Gab said, hopefully will change the course of how people treat one another when they walk different paths, you know.
Yeah. Gab, let me finish with you. It's been a while since you filmed this. The two of you kind of are intersecting here and there at film festivals. I think right now one of you is on the East Coast and one of you is on the West Coast. But what is the bond that you will share with Jeremy in the years forward?
Oh my gosh. Well, I just saw him at a tech rehearsal of his play that opened. And knowing that he was going between the inspection and then, you know, this... I don't know if embody is a big enough word. I feel like there's a better, bigger word for what this transformation that Jeremy does to become Basquiat and to go toe to toe with Paul Bettany. Are you kidding me? And the whole time I'm just like, I'm literally in my seat. I'm like, totally that lady. Like, I was like, I hope I'm disruptive, but he's just so painfully talented. And he will have a piece of my heart, and it will have nothing to do with his actual ability. But I have so much more respect for his love and his passion. That's what makes him him. And he will have a place in my heart forever. And that same sense of protection, I don't want to be like weird and emotional, but it's a similar feeling than when I first met Michael K. Williams. And obviously different actors, different journeys. But that like they have the ability to reach in and grab pieces of your heart. And that if it's anything like with Mike, it's everlasting. Talk to him probably more now than I did, you know, when he was alive. So it's a similar connection that is a soul connection. Outside of my own kids, he just feels like there's a piece of me in him that will remain, hopefully everlasting, a lot longer than the time I had with Mike. But that level of intensity and love and admiration, and when I'm watching him, I'm just crying and cheering like a weirdo.
I love it. It's a pleasure to see you both. I congratulate you again on these beautiful performances. For people who haven't seen The Inspection, it is available on demand as of December 22nd, so it's easier to see than ever before. Jeremy Pope, Gabrielle Union, great to see you both. And thanks so much for taking some time.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, as always, Dave killing it there with his interviews. But here's the question I pose to the two of you, because this is a role that I think people will perhaps not expect to see Gabrielle Union in, because she's done so many. I mean, she's certainly done dramatic movies across her career, but also lots of like fun stuff. But to me, I feel like this might be one that that opens doors for her. What are your thoughts?
I agree with you. I think one constant, well, and they, you know, she's had some sort of villainous characters, but she's usually pretty likable in her roles. And, you know, and she's pretty likable off screen too. She's very, very charming and bright. And it seems, something like this will make people see her depths a little bit more. I wouldn't be surprised if it opened some more doors for her, as far as dramatic roles, because she's so good in this, and it does show a different side of her. So yeah, absolutely. I think this will help.
Yeah. The supporting roles are often that opportunity for an actor. I think about, Tom Cruise in Magnolia, where suddenly we saw this completely different side of him. And it's a side very often that the actors want to finally engage with. If you are just getting around to seeing Babylon, for example, you will see a completely different Tobey Maguire. A Tobey Maguire who is the opposite of boyish and charming. He plays the sort of the denizen of the underworld of that film. And he we did an interview with him, and he clearly relished the opportunity to go dark. And I think that it's probably the same case in Union's example, where, you know, the opportunity to show a range, to demonstrate the kind of chops that she doesn't often get a chance to. I think that that's exactly what these indie films are great for.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, look, I'm happy for her for that to happen. I think she's a great actress, and it's always nice to see someone kind of get what all of us have always kind of felt, they deserved, and you know, for a role to unlock that for them. So I can't wait to see what else she has coming up after this. And Jeremy Pope is just talented young guy.
Amazing.
Yeah, so he's going to have some legs in this business for sure. So with that, Josh and Clarissa, thanks so much. That's another episode. We did it.
Thanks, Jared.
We did it.
We did it. We got through the holidays. We got into the new year. And now all eyes are on Oscars. Folks, thanks so much for listening. That is it for this episode of The Awardist. As I mentioned, if you like what you heard, follow, rate the podcast, and leave us an award-winning review on Apple Podcasts. And to keep the conversation with us going, follow Entertainment Weekly on all socials at EW on Twitter and at Entertainment Weekly everywhere else. And you can also tag me if you want. I'm at Jared Hall. We'll see you back here next week. This episode of the Awardist podcast is hosted by Jared Hall, produced by Chanel Johnson and Sammy Junio, edited by Sammy Junio. Full episode transcripts are available at EW.com. Thanks for listening.